Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest today is RFERL senior correspondent Robert Coulson. Rob, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks a lot. Nice to be back.
All right. Well, a couple of things happening this week are, of course, the MH17 trial in the Netherlands, which opened today, and the second reading of the legislation that will change the Russian constitution. That should take place tomorrow and more developments later in the week. Of course, we're also watching the fallout from Russia's surprise decision not to go along with oil production cuts proposed by OPEC last week. I'll speak a little bit about that today, but we're going to focus on MH17 and the constitutional changes. Now, MH17, it's been more than 5.5 years now since the flight was shot down. To me, in a way, it seems like the wheels of justice have turned fairly quickly, although the judge in the Netherlands opening the trial of the four suspects who are not there in absentia said that many people have long awaited this day, and also said that he turned back to the downing of flight MH17 and said it was something that was almost incomprehensible. And of course, the four defendants accused of murder, three Russian citizens and a Ukrainian citizen, are not in the courtroom near the Amsterdam airport, which of course is where the flight to Kuala Lumpur took off on July 14th, 2014, with 298 people on board. All of them were killed. Yesterday, relatives of some of the victims set up 298 empty chairs outside the Russian embassy in The Hague to symbolize the victims who are not coming back. Rob, I realize it's only just getting underway, but I wanted to ask, what's your impression of this trial? Do you think it has a good chance of advancing the cause of justice? Will it change what people in the West or in Russia, for that matter, think about this? On Russia, I'll note polling by the Levada Center in 2015, and then again just a couple of months ago, there were different poll questions, but essentially they found the same number, or the number of Russians who blame their country, the government, the military, for the downing of flight MH17 has remained unchanged at about 2%.
That's a good question. It's an interesting case study, I think, for the times that we live in a sense. The trial will be very long. It'll be very complicated. It's the result of 6 years of investigation by hundreds of investigators, probably hundreds of thousands of person hours of work. And it will be a slow, lumbering process. On the other hand, the Russian state spinmeisters and Russian bots and other online forces are spinning constantly, various narratives, throwing out all sorts of confusing, diversionary theories about various things. Mm-hmm. And as you've already seen, the foreign ministry in Russia is already setting the tone that any Western coverage is already basically biased and pushing towards some sort of predetermined conclusion that it was Russia's fault, et cetera.
Exactly.
So, it's a really good example of a slow moving truth trying to fight off a huge flock of mosquitoes, lies, that sort of thing. And I think it's very unlikely that people are going to have the attention span to really follow the ins and outs of the trial and really assess the evidence. On the other hand, if the court makes some rulings about Russia's role in the conflict in eastern Ukraine, you know, some official rulings that can be quoted in various stories and various, it could make it much easier for journalists and for public figures to talk about the conflict in Ukraine without making it sound like it's just a separatist conflict, local civil war.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in conjunction with the poll results that I mentioned earlier, one thing that we saw, our Moscow correspondent Matthew Luxmore had a story that mentioned this, is that about 60%, I think, of Russians or a majority suggested they would be willing to kind of take into consideration the results of the of the trial, or in other words, more specifically, I think the what they said was that if, as a result of the investigation and trial, the international community determines that Russia was to blame, then Russia should compensate victims' relatives. So it's a little bit of a narrow answer, but it does show some openness for a change, at least in if not the government's the Russian government's propaganda about this, it does sort of open the door for a change to some degree in what Russian citizens think about MH17. So, let's talk about the constitutional changes that are drawing closer in Russia. They'll take effect, it looks like, after a nationwide vote, which is scheduled for April 22nd. And that will come after Putin signs the law on the changes, which is expected to happen on March 18th, next week. But this week, the proposed amendments will go through a crucial second reading vote in the State Duma. That's tomorrow, after which their wording will be pretty much set in stone. Now, there are some amendments, the first ones that Putin described in January, essentially in his State of the Nation speech, that will rearrange the power structure in Russia to some degree. A lot of talk about, whether Putin is using those and whether the whole point is to enable him to continue to hold power after 2024 when his current term is scheduled to end. And now we know that there are other amendments that will rule out same-sex marriage, inject mention of God into the Constitution, and set ethnic Russians out as the, quote, state-forming, unquote, group. And there are also the so-called social amendments that deal with pensions and such. Rob, which proposed amendments seem the most striking and potentially significant to you?
Again, it's really interesting. I think the groups that you talk about are right. And the one thing I would say about the political ones is that it's amazing how Putin is able to get this far into the process without tipping his hand about exactly what is going to happen and how they're important. So on the one hand, those are the really important ones, but even experts who follow it much closer than I do are arguing among themselves about what they mean and how they're going to work, which I think is a credit, in a sense, to the Kremlin's manipulations of the political arena.
Absolutely.
The other ones are, I think analysts are rightly saying, are aimed basically at getting people to come out for the vote, making the endorsement of the political changes seem more legitimate, more acceptable to the international community, and sort of give momentum to whatever comes next after Putin's term expires. But they're really risky in a lot of sense. First of all, the economic ones, they're very specific about pensions and indexation and things like that. And,
right.
And they make a lot of economic promises that will be difficult for future governments, I think, to hold, to keep to, although in Russia, of course, there are always ways of manipulating those things.
Mm-hmm.
And the other ones, the mention of God, what kind of God, the mention of the ethnic Russians as the state-forming people. This is a lot of sort of non-legalistic language that they're introducing into the very foundational law of the country. And whether these are going to come up in court cases and in defamation cases, that sort of thing, offending beliefs of people, that sort of thing, it could really be a Pandora's box that Russia will have to deal with for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I tried to address this in an article last week about, on the one hand, the wording about God, wording about same-sex marriage is quite clear. Wording about God and about ethnic Russians, the Russian language, it's quite vague in a way. Especially the wording about God says something like Russia sort of takes into account the belief in God, the values and the belief in God that our forefathers bequeathed us. So it's like, okay, but what does that mean? And as you say, in legal terms, and kind of on the ground, it's who knows what it could what kind of conflicts, I guess, it could bring among other things. And I feel like Putin's always been pretty careful about ethnic issues, that sort of thing. And to set ethnic Russians as a state-forming group, I mean, it does, as you say, I think that kind of thing opens a Pandora's box. So, you know, we will see what how that plays out, and I think these will be part of the Constitution in the matter of a month or two. Now, another thing I mentioned, we're going to be watching this kind of fallout from Russia's decision not to, this was on Friday evening, not to go along with, there's something called OPEC Plus, or there was, where Russia and OPEC set prices, or they have agreement, they had an agreement for 3 years, I think, to, you know, to keep production down. And with the coronavirus depressing kind of, you know, flights, tourism, and industry, they were apparently set to agree to reduce production more, and Russia said no, and now so that sent oil prices plunging and the ruble also plunging. Now there's a lot of talk about why Russia did this, and some people are saying, you know, at least in part, to punish the U.S. for its opposition, for its efforts to stop the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline, and also on a broader scale, I guess, to try to essentially put the U.S. Shale oil business out of business, and kind of get rid of that or curb that form of production, which is quite, you know, which is obviously hurting Russia's market share. So, I mean, those are some of the potential motives. But now we see Saudi Arabia, is increasing production. So there's going to be so Russia obviously faces significant consequences from oil prices dropping. The ruble has very quickly hit something, a low that is unseen since early 2016. So, we're definitely going to be watching what effects this has and how it plays into everything that Putin's trying to do. And we'll maybe talk about that more next time. And for now, let's wrap it up for today. Rob, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right. I'll be back next Monday for another discussion of the week ahead. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for The Week in Russia, my newsletter about recent events. Thanks for listening.